Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm Douglas Impuga in Washington. Today is Thursday, October 12th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Liberians await the results of Tuesday's presidential and parliamentary elections.
The situation is scary right now, literally affecting all our lives. We lost some French Israelis in the last 3 days in that horrific attacks. We are actually under rocket attacks that every few minutes.
Tension grows on Israel's northern border as Hezbollah fires an anti-tank missile at an army post, and fighting continues between Israel and Hamas.
I have seen and I have witnessed the level of human rights violations that have happened within Sudan, so that what we hear from people who have crossed the borders is really heartbreaking. And that's the protection crisis that we are faced with, and it has been ongoing for the past 6 months.
And the UN Refugee Agency says the humanitarian emergency in conflict-ridden Sudan has created a protection crisis both inside the country and in countries of asylum. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. There was more tension Wednesday on Israel's northern border as Hezbollah fired an anti-tank missile at an Israeli army post. Fighting between Israel and Hamas continues as Israel weighs its military options. A Sudanese national, Monim Harum, and his fellow migrants find themselves living in constant fear and with no apparent escape route since the onset of the Hamas-Israel conflict, ignited by a sudden attack by Hamas militants on Israel. Harum, who works for the Jewish Refugee Agency, Hayas, discussed the harrowing situation with my colleague, Nabil Biagio, from Tel Aviv.
The situation is scary right now, literally affecting all our lives. We lost some French Israelis in the last 3 days in that horrific attacks. We are actually under rocket attacks that every few minutes we will hear the sirens and then the calls of the plantations and the bombardments.
I know rockets from the Gaza Strip have been hitting some towns in Israel. Even people in Tel Aviv, where you work, where you're speaking with me from, the capital, have been using bomb shelters in their buildings. Tell me what daily life looks like.
Everything is, unfortunately, became upside down. Like people would work, go to work, but also, they're ready any time to go to the bomb shelters, because you never know when the sirens will go on, or you never know when the rockets will be sent to Israel. So it is sort of trying to work and at the same time to be alarmed of the situation and of the rockets.
Yes, this is Tel Aviv. What about back where you live in Western Jerusalem?
Yeah, in Western Jerusalem, it's a bit intense. It's less intense than in other areas, like in the south, Ashkelon and Ashdod and Ashdod, and also less intense in Tel Aviv, but 2 days ago there were about 5 rockets were sent, and one was just landed next village where I live. So it was really close.
And through your work with Hayes, you work with refugees and you connected with the Sudanese and maybe South Sudanese diaspora communities there in Israel. Tell me about, the situation with them, especially those close to the dangerous areas in the south of the country.
Thank you so much for asking that question. Yeah, so we work with all the refugees, Sudanese, Eritreans, Ukrainians, and other refugees in Israel, including Palestinians. So there is a big community of refugees community in the south, in Israel and in Ashkelon, and they are similar to Israeli citizens. They are in a very, very difficult situation. Like, since yesterday and today, I have been speaking to them to figure out how we can help as Hayas and what they need. Many of them, they're at homes, not leaving home at all, because it is sadly unsafe to go out. Unfortunately, also, we have one Sudanese refugee being killed by Hamas 2 days ago.
Where was he killed? Was he killed in his home?
In his yard. He was killed on the street. Like, he was found lying with his blood on the street.
Sorry to hear that.
Thank you. I even can't find words to explain the situation, literally.
And if this fighting does not stop, what options are you considering and the refugees are considering? I know Sudan is already engulfed by its own six-month-long conflict.
Right.
What course of action do you have and your compatriots there?
Unfortunately, it seems like also, like Israeli citizens, there is no almost options, like there's no way to escape. It seems like there's no way to go to Egypt or to Jordan, because as refugees from Sudan being in Israel, we're also considered and we are unwelcomed in those countries. And the only option might be that we be evacuated by one of the Western countries. At the same time, the discourse within the refugees here is that they are in solidarity with the Israeli society, because these people have been living here for over 15 years, and they created friendship with Israelis, and they're sort of connected to the society here. I have been speaking to people, but no one is thinking of leaving Israel, but all what they are concerned about, how they can help, how they can show their solidarity with the society that they are living in.
Monim Haroum, a Sudanese national residing in West Jerusalem, offered his insights during a conversation with my colleague Nabil Biagio from Tel Aviv. Meanwhile, Palestinians are receiving support from various parts of the Arab world as the conflict between Hamas and Israel enters its sixth day. Edward Iranian reports for VOA from Cairo.
Egyptian Foreign Minister Sama Shoukry told journalists at a press conference with visiting Italian Foreign Minister Antonio Tajani that officials from the two sides discussed the need to stop the escalation of the conflict in Gaza and the seriousness of destruction and attacks on civilians. They also called for the application of international law regarding treatment of civilians in times of war. Jordan, meanwhile, sent aid supplies to Egypt for the Palestinian residents of Gaza, according to Saudi-owned Al Arabiya TV. It was not immediately clear how Egypt plans to distribute those supplies. The border between Egypt and Gaza is closed, and there were scattered reports over the past several days of shelling near the border. In Syria, government TV broadcasts what it called a student demonstration in the capital, Damascus, with several hundred students chanting slogans in support of the Palestinians and waving Palestinian flags. The students told the TV that they had come from universities across the country to support the Palestinian people. One young man who identified himself as a student leader from a university outside Damascus told the TV that he and other Syrian students stand behind the Palestinian people's battle to free themselves from what he called Israeli occupation. He says that we are standing proudly in support of the Palestinian people, and we want to tell them that their cause is our cause and that we all stand behind them and wish them victory in their struggle. Saudi-owned Ashark al-Awsat newspaper reported that Lebanon's caretaker prime minister Najib Mikati met with top security officials to discuss security measures being taken across the country. U.S. Ambassador to Beirut Dorothy Shea met with Mikati and Parliament Speaker Nabi Berri, warning them Tuesday of the consequences of the pro-Iranian Hezbollah militia's participation in the Gaza war, according to the Beirut Daily Aliwa. In Iraq, Prime Minister Mohammed Shia Sudani defended the deadly weekend attack by Palestinian militant group Hamas on Israel's southern border communities and urged Iraqis to support the Palestinian cause. He says that the Hamas attack on Israel is a normal reaction to the massive injustice that the Palestinian people have been subjected to in recent years. Arab media broadcast a video of a crowd of a few dozen Iraqi Shiite religious leaders and their supporters demonstrating in the narrow streets of the Baghdad district of Qasimiyya, chanting slogans in favor of the Palestinians and against Israel. Monday, Iraq's mercurial Shiite political leader Muqtada Sadr called on Iraqis to hold a peaceful million-man demonstration in favor of the Palestinian cause while urging demonstrators to burn Israeli flags. In Algeria, the country's parliament speaker, Brahim Bougali, asked MPs to stand as he recited an Islamic prayer for the dead to honor Palestinians that have been killed in the war between Israel and Hamas. Bougali did not mention Israeli casualties of the conflict. Edward Uranian, VOA News, Cairo.
Vote counting is underway in Liberia as incumbent President George Weah, a decorated former football star, seeks a second six-year term in a contentious rematch with former Vice President Joseph Boakai of the main opposition Unity Party, UP. William Amashinini Red is the president of the Liberian Community Association of Washington, D.C. area metropolitan areas, and associate professor in the School of Global Journalism at Morgan State University. She tells me the elections seem to have gone well.
The elections went on pretty calmly, and there was no violence. So it was a peaceful election. Everybody had been sitting at the edge of their seats, worried that, you know, it would be a little bit tense, but it ended up peaceful. As far as the voting went, it was smooth. There were very, very few accounts of, if you want to call it, irregularities, but not really, not irregularities. A couple of people had their names scratched off the roster because either they appeared more than once. But that was, those were very few incidents, nothing remarkable to talk about. Now, in terms of the votes, based on the polls that came, it seems at this point that the former vice president, Joseph Boakai, he seems to be in the lead. And the current president, George Weah, is tightly running close behind him. You know, there were at least 20 candidates in this race, and the rest of the candidates fall far short. So if Boakai is predicted based on the reports from individual precincts, it seems like Boakai is in the lead with perhaps over 50%, perhaps. And you need at least 50+1 to be declared the winner. Otherwise, they will be going to a runoff.
Do we know when the final results may be announced?
Well, the National Election Commission, NEC they call it, is expected to make an announcement today. But I don't imagine that the announcement will read out the final results, because the large counties with the most highest populations, and that is Nimba County, Monserrato, where the capital is, has the largest population. All these areas, most of the votes are in, but there are other areas in the southeast and the votes are not all in yet. So we expect by at least Thursday, we will have a final result announced, but they are making an announcement today.
So in case the former vice president wins, that should be it. Otherwise, they're going to be a runoff between the two top candidates.
If he goes over 50%, that's it. It will cost the country much less money if he wins. Then they don't have to spend that money on the second round. You know, we have talked so much about the war that was in Liberia back in the late 1990s, early 2000s. And if anything good came out of that, it is that since democracy has returned, we have seen a consistent turnover of government from one election to the other, turnover from one party to the other. The Liberian people are exercising their democratic rights. They are voting people in. They're voting people out. If you don't perform, and the electoral system in Liberia has worked over the past couple of years. It's worked. The announcements of the votes are made at the precinct. They are signed by all the party representatives. Poll watchers have come from all over the world. And so by the time the tally reached to the headquarters of the Election Commission, people already know who is winning. So cheating becomes very difficult. I think that's one positive thing that has come after the war. The democratic process is alive and working in Liberia.
That's Wilma Mashinini Reid, the president of the Liberian Community Association of the Washington, D.C. metropolitan areas and associate professor in the School of Global Journalism at Morgan State University. She spoke with me from Washington, D.C. The United Nations Refugee Agency, UNHCR, warns the humanitarian emergency in conflict-ridden Sudan has created a protection crisis both inside the country and in countries of asylum. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
More than 5.4 million people in Sudan have been uprooted from their homes since conflict erupted nearly 6 months ago, making it the fastest displacement crisis in the world. The UN Refugee Agency says the dangers encountered by people fleeing violence also make Sudan one of the largest protection crises facing the agency today. UNHCR Regional Refugee Coordinator for the Sudan Situation, Mamadou Diane Balde, says more than 1 million refugees have crossed the border under very difficult circumstances. He says during a recent visit to Sudan, he witnessed the violence and human rights violations experienced by unprotected women, children, and elderly people leaving for South Sudan.
I have seen and I have witnessed the level of human rights violations that have happened within Sudan, so that what we hear from people who have crossed the borders is really heartbreaking. And that's the protection crisis that we are faced with, and it has been ongoing for the past 6 months.
Balde told journalists in Geneva today that millions of refugees and internally displaced people also are threatened because they cannot receive life-saving aid. He says only 29% of the $1 billion in funds agencies need to combat humanitarian emergencies has arrived. He warns of serious repercussions for the millions of vulnerable people unable to fend for themselves if the international community does not close this funding shortfall.
It's people who no longer can eat, people who no longer are able to have access to their basic rights, but it's also negative coping mechanism. It's about child labor. It's about risk of prostitution. It's taking these communities, putting them in the hand of smugglers and traffickers.
Balde says the UNHCR expects the number of Sudanese refugees is likely to reach 1.8 million by the end of the year. He warns the longer the crisis drags on, the greater the risk the conflict will spill over into other countries and destabilize the region. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm Douglas Impuga in Washington. The European Investment Bank said on Wednesday it will lend Morocco 1 billion euros over the next 3 years to support the North African country's reconstruction efforts after a September earthquake. Reuters news agency says the loan was announced by the bank's vice president, Ricardo Moreno Felix, after a meeting with Morocco's budget minister, Fawzi Laja, in Marrakech on the sidelines of the IMF World Bank annual meetings. The earthquake struck on September 8th, killing nearly 3,000 people and damaged 60,000 homes, mostly in the High Atlas Mountains. Uganda this week marked the anniversary of its independence, hailing what it says is 61 years of progress as a free nation. For some Ugandans, however, freedom is something they can only dream about. Halima Athman reports from the capital, Kampala.
Oliver Lutaya is a local food vendor and single mother of two. She has appeared before an army court martial 24 times since June of 2021, 5 months after the country's last general elections were held. Lutaya is one of 28 members of the opposition National Unity Platform who are accused of treachery and possession of ammunition stemming from the election, which President Yoweri Museveni won. Human Rights Watch has said the vote was characterized by widespread violence and human rights abuses. On a rainy Saturday, May 8, 2021, Lutaya says she received a call from an unknown person who said her mobile number had been used in the theft of a motorcycle. Lutaya says she locked up her two children in their one-room house and quickly offered to clear up the issue by meeting the caller at the nearest police station. She disappeared after that. Sarah Nambi is Lutaya's aunt. Nambi says she became concerned when she did not hear from her niece. Nambi says 3 months later, she learned that Lutaya was being held at the Kigo government prison. When Lutaya was moved to the Luzira maximum security prison, Nambi went to visit. Nambi says at that time, she learned more about her niece's incarceration. She says, I asked her what happened and what the issue was. She said, Auntie, they claim they got me with an improvised explosive device bomb. Nambi says, I asked her, you only had keys and an umbrella then. Where was the bomb? She says, because she had on a very skimpy skirt. Nambi says, I asked her where the explosives were and she told me she too knew nothing. Lutaya has pleaded not guilty to the charges which carry the death sentence. A trial date has never been set as the prosecution states it is not ready to start the proceedings. Uganda celebrated its 61st Independence Day celebrations October 9th under the theme Sustaining a United and Progressive Nation, Taking Charge of Our Future as a Free Nation. For Sarah Nambi, this theme wasn't meaningful. She says, to be honest, I wasn't happy about it when I have a prisoner who didn't enjoy her freedom. She says, it is a day of independence, yet I have someone who isn't independent. No. Nicholas Opio, a human rights lawyer, says for those who have been subjected to alleged human rights violations, the independence slogan and celebrations mean nothing.
Unless there is commitment to ensure that innocent people who are disappeared, who were tortured, who were extrajudicially killed by the state in the past elections, unless they can get accountability, their families will continue to express discontent, and I think in the future be bad for this country.
Government spokesman Ofono Pondo says those facing court martial have similar rights as those before civil courts, like access to bail, lawyers, kin, and an open trial, except when they haven't called for one. Opondo said if the relatives choose, they can seek redress if they feel their loved ones aren't being treated fairly. Lutaya and the other 27 members will once again appear before the court martial next Monday. Nambi says she hopes that one day she lives to see her niece free and reunited with Lutaya's 7 and 12-year-old children. Halima Othmani for VA News, Kampala.
And that's it for this Thursday, October 12th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for being our guest this morning. For more African news and features, visit our website at voafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the very able Daybreak Africa crew, I'm Douglas Impuga in Washington, wishing you a great day.
More peace, new experience, and some adventure. That is the desires of many women. But what does this journey require? On this week's episode of Our Voices, we discuss what makes a woman want to leave her comfort zone for new adventurous experiences and how that journey may help her to be the best version of herself. Join the conversation on